Greetings and welcome to Podcasts with Professionals, nonprofit edition, brought to you by the Epsilon Phi Chapter of the Southwestern Region of Iota Phi Lambda Sorority, Incorporated. Iota Phi Lambda Sorority is the first African-American Greek-lettered business sorority established by African-American businesswomen. I am your host, Veronique Scott, of the Epsilon Phi Chapter. I am a licensed attorney with over 20 years of nonprofit management experience gained through several organizations, including the APC Inc., where I currently serve as the Chief Legal Officer. I also have over 17 years of experience with creating nonprofit organizations through my business, CEO Depot. I am very passionate about nonprofit organizations and excited to bring you this nonprofit edition of Podcasts with Professionals. We have an amazing guest today who spends a large amount of her time serving her community and helping the people of Baltimore, Maryland. But before I introduce her, let me tell you a little bit about our topic, the nonprofit edition. In Texas, a nonprofit corporation is a corporation where no part of the income of which is distributable to members, directors, or officers. One nonprofit fact is that approximately 63 million Americans, 25% of the adult population to be exact, volunteer their time, talents, and energy to making a difference. Our guest, Joanne Thomas. Welcome, Ms. Joanne. Welcome to the podcast today.
Good afternoon, everyone. Again, I'm Joanne Thomas, and I am currently the Director of Rental Services for St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center. St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center was founded in 1968 to confront the pervasive redlining and blockbusting practices that discriminated against home buyers of color. In addition to that, St. Ambrose provides a plethora of other services such as home sharing with our home sharing department for our youth. Our homeless youth is a lost target, and we provide home sharing as a part of our community engagement at St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center. And we also provide case management services that help with situations such as foreclosures, evictions, things like violence against women, people that are homeless due to domestic situations, people that are homeless because they are returning back to society from jail, and of course, people who are ill, such as our people that are people of color, most importantly, that are suffering from HIV and other long-term illnesses. St. Ambrose has been in existence for 50 years. We serve the Baltimore City and Baltimore County area. We are currently trying to expand our services more in Baltimore County. We do have housing portfolios in Baltimore County that have been earmarked and devoted to our senior community, which is also a lost community with regard to housing. So I want to tell a little bit about myself. Again, Joanne Thomas. I'm a native of Baltimore, Maryland. I'm married with one wonderful son that attends Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. I attended the all infamous Baltimore City College High School, one of the oldest high schools in the world, and I earned a baccalaureate degree from Baltimore City College High School. From high school, I attended the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which is located in Catonsville, Maryland, a subdivision of Baltimore County. I finished my degree at University of Phoenix with a degree in business management. As stated before, currently I am the Director of Rental Services for St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center. We provide all types of affordable housing programs, such as a site-based Section 8, Housing Choice Voucher Section 8, low-income housing tax credit, a plethora of affordable housing provides services to our low and very low-income families in Baltimore City and in Baltimore County. St. Ambrose owns all of its properties in its portfolio, and this makes it a lot easier to service the constituents of Baltimore because we have more control if you own the properties. So what we do is we have a portfolio of houses, and we actually do direct leasing to constituents of Baltimore City and Baltimore County by way of affordable housing programs. So, which means that we will receive funding from the federal government to pay rents or a portion of rents for these tenants. And then the tenants, based on their income, will pay what we call a TTP portion, which is a tenant portion based on their income. And some people pay as little as $25, and others pay more depending on their growth through the St. Ambrose projects.
Wow, St. Ambrose really does amazing work in that Baltimore community. I'm sure Baltimoreans are happy to have that organization be such an impact on those who need it most. You have shared with us your educational experience from the Baltimore City College High School and your degree. You know, we really want to dive right in and talking about nonprofit management and nonprofit organization. Tell us, why are nonprofits important?
Well, first and foremost, nonprofits are important in society because they solve problems that are not solved in an ordinary manner. For example, if you were looking for a person or an entity or a way to clean up a park, you live in an area that has a park that is not clean, and you find that the children in the community would benefit from a clean park, how would you do that? How would you fund a venture such as that? So you have your problem, and it starts with your problem. So now how do you resolve that problem by financial means? A systematic approach to resolving this problem. So that would be, of course, a gateway to starting a nonprofit organization that would keep a park clean, for example. So it would begin, a nonprofit would begin by first and foremost picking your problem, deciding your passion. It could begin with your passion, it could begin with your personal ministry, or any underfunded problem or service that truly interests you. Okay. You would then move forward. You got the problem. You got this passion, this heartfelt passion that would benefit, that the community or persons would benefit from. You would write a full strategic business plan. And how that works is a lot of folks make the mistake when doing a nonprofit of not to plan. With a nonprofit organization, you require a full strategic business plan, just as you do with a for-profit organization. Okay.
Hey, I like that. Full strategic business plan. You know, a lot of times when I'm out and about, people always want to know exactly what you're sharing with us. They come up and they say, oh, I like to feed the homeless. So they have that need, right, that you mentioned. But then they say, and I'm always doing it from my home, or I go to the park and I do it, but I want to start a nonprofit organization. So in addition to that business plan, what else do people need to do to start a nonprofit organization?
Well, going forward, after you have documented your full strategic plan and gone over it several times, especially the financial portion, you would start by incorporating your business. You would file your articles of incorporation. And the reason you would do this is that this unlocks the world of funding reserved specifically for nonprofits. You would select your board of directors. And your board of directors should include subject matter experts, your legal experts, a CPA if you could find one, or just an accounting expert. And lastly, you always want to have that engagement. So you want to find community members to provide that continued engagement and investment so that your nonprofit will go on and on and on. You would then apply for your 501(c) tax exempt status. So you would simply go to your IRS, go to the IRS website, and fill out the online application to do that. You would then stay with your IRS website. And now you're going to obtain your federal tax ID number. Okay. Those two things are very important things in the process of creating your nonprofit. You would then register your business in the state in which you want to do your business. For example, you may reside in Maryland, but you want to do business in the state of Texas. So that means that you would contact the state of Texas and create your entity through the state of Texas. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Ms. Joanne Thomas, an expert in nonprofit management, is giving us a play-by-play on how to open and start your nonprofit organization. In my business, CEO Depot, I also do these for people. I've done several of them over the last 17 years. So if you couldn't get all the details that Ms. Joanne laid out, then don't hesitate to reach out to us at ceo-depot.com so that we can assist you further with setting up your nonprofit. My son, he's in kindergarten. He came home one day last week, and he was telling me that they're learning about fiction and nonfiction. And I thought that's such a big word for a kindergartner. But it brings me to our next segment. I'm going to talk some nonfiction about nonprofits. There are approximately 1.8 million nonprofit organizations in the United States. And that's courtesy of causeiq.com. States with the most nonprofits include California, Texas, New York. Now, one might say, when you think about the residents of that state, California and New York, of course, there's a lot of big money in those states. But if you know Texas like I know Texas, we're never far behind, especially when it comes to providing for those in need. Let's go now to talk about Who actually runs or manages a nonprofit organization?
So that's a very good question. So a nonprofit organization is usually headed by the executive director. And that executive director reports to the board, executive board. The executive board, as explained before, has those subject matter experts, all of those legal entities, whatever you needed to create your board is there to support your executive director, who will actually be, if you will, sort of the president of the company. He will oversee all of the activities of the organization and make sure that everything is done in accordance with the laws of this that govern this nonprofit organization. Some of those things would include, for example, your funding, and we're going to talk about funding a little bit later on. But if your funding, your funder, or your benefactors are requiring certain reports, certain financial reports, or certain performance measurements, or certain benchmarks at certain parts or times of the year, such as audits and things of that nature, your executive director is the chief person that would oversee and make sure that all of those things happen through his or her facilitation. So that's how the reporting structure goes. There's also government reporting that you would need to abide by. There are fiscal year audits that need to happen. There are independent audits, which are outside audits, to maintain a system of checks and balances, because in a nonprofit, which is different from a for-profit, there is much more reporting because of the tax-exempt status that is given to a nonprofit.
Okay, yes, ma'am. So, in addition, you kind of brought us to our next topic, which is nonprofit funding. But I just want to share with the audience, nonprofits can be funded in many ways. For example, Candid.org, another nonfiction about nonprofits, tells us that 32% of charities rely on program services. That means they do a service that benefits a public or a specific body, and that body then pays them for that service. That kind of seems very much like a regular business, but at the end of the day, the financial benefit from performing that service goes back into the coffers to pay those who perform the services or to pay the employees for that bit for that nonprofit. Also, 30% of annual giving occurs in December. I know many of us can remember, Christmas time, going with the family down to the Salvation Army to feed the homeless or to feed affected families, or even going to the church and maybe packing up some extra gifts or warm blankets or coats and gloves so that those who are affected by poverty can deal with the winter. But also, many households, as they're ending up the winding down the year and closing the checkbook for December 31st, they issue their payment or their gift to their charity. And that's 30% of the annual giving. You think about December is just one of 12 months, but a huge chunk of funding comes in December. In addition, donors can donate in kind. That's where they donate an item, or they can donate money, or there can be donor advised funds. Just as an aside, Ms. Joanne, Has St. Ambrose ever received an in-kind gift of a property?
We have received several in-kind properties. For example, our founder, who, by the way, just passed away this past Tuesday, our founder, and he had donated his personal properties. For example, he did donate a vacation property for the company, so the company can relax during the summer months in Ocean City, or any other month during the calendar year, without the tax implications being brought on St. Ambrose. He has also donated other property for use in the portfolio of affordable housing that we provide for St. Ambrose. So one of those other properties would include our senior property, which is located in Towson, Maryland, that houses constituents or clients 62 and over for the purposes of affordable housing. And what this does to the community is that it allows senior people over the age of 62 to live independently when a large house has become too burdensome for a senior person. These apartments are one bedrooms with about 653 square feet approximately. So it again, it solves a problem that we have in the community, and that is housing for seniors. So as we stated before, and we go back to where we were talking about how a nonprofit solves an issue, this is a prime example of how nonprofits can provide or benefit the community at large.
Wow, your founder sounds super awesome. I want to say first, our prayers and our thoughts go out to his family, that they certainly are comforted in their bereavement. And I know that many of your staff and people at your organization are also affected by that. And I can tell because of the wonderful gifts that he left in that vacation property. I hope you get your name on the roster for that one. Reserve a couple dates because we're going to vacate, okay? But
Absolutely.
I want to follow up though with in addition to that that in-kind gift that your that the founder of your nonprofit organization left. Tell us about other ways nonprofits receive money. What are some other funding mechanisms?
Well, that's a good question, Verity. There are basically three types of funding mechanisms for nonprofits. Those funding mechanisms include grants. Grants is the most widely used mechanism because it's generally the least restrictive. It's used to accomplish a public purpose. It has no involvement of the sponsor, no specific outcome is required. So, for example, if we are getting, as an example, a donation from Iota Phi Lambda, Iota Phi Lambda does not want to have any specific involvement in what goes on or the daily operations of St. Ambrose, or the entity. They just want to donate money. They may have some specific guidelines, but generally grants are less restrictive in their guidelines. There are grants that you can receive on an annual basis, and they may state so. There are grants that you have to apply for that are very competitive, but for the most part, that's your least restrictive avenue. The next funding mechanism would be your cooperative agreement. Your cooperative agreement is more has more restrictive terms and conditions. Some of those conditions could be that you hire staff only from Baltimore City. That might be a condition of their granting funds, or it could be that you don't go outside a certain boundary. For example, we don't go out of the Baltimore metropolitan area. We want to engage only these folks, these constituents that live in Baltimore City and Baltimore County. So those are examples of restrictive terms and conditions in a cooperative agreement. Also in a cooperative agreement, the benefactor might want to contribute to the work by being an active, whether volunteer, or if the person or the entity wanted to be a paid benefactor within the organization. So these things happen a lot as well. But as I said before, the grant is the main avenue or conveyance for funding. And then lastly, you have your contracts. Your contracts are the most restrictive because they have to be followed to the letter. And as you well know, a contract is a contract. It outlines specifically what the outcome is going to be and how the performance is going to play out. So most sponsor experts, they it provides specific deliverables. For example, you had, in order to continue to receive the monies under this contract, you have to have 98% occupancy at all times in your portfolio. And that's just an example of St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center. So that might be in the contract. In order to continue with the contract on the next year, you had to have achieved 98% occupancy. So you see how that is extremely restrictive. There's no wiggle room or play in the terms. So that's how contracts work with a nonprofit. Again, I want to again mention that grants are most widely used. They expand the programs of your nonprofit. It supplements resources for the nonprofit. You can secure additional equipment and supplies for your projects because it's not as restrictive. Grants also tend to attract new staff and a different type of person that you may want as a part of the nonprofit staff. So grants provide payment for payroll for additional staff. It increases the agency. It allows you to expand the agency with new staff and new initiatives. In some cases, it brings prestige to the organization in that certain grants are very, very competitive and hard to get. So if you are a benefactor of, say, for example, St. Ambrose has a very large benefactor called NeighborWorks. So we are a benefactor of, we receive funds from grants given to us by NeighborWorks. So that is very substantial in this industry. So it enhances or it makes our presence greater in the community and more respected. So these are some of the ways that you can finance or fund, not finance, but fund a nonprofit.
Hey, we're talking about nonprofits and funding. And so let me give you guys a few more nonfictions about nonprofits. 53% of all charities rely on contributions for the majority of their revenue. If you've been thinking about donating and you're holding on to that check, well, it should comfort you to know that that charity is waiting on that money too. They need it to operate and to continue the great work that they're doing. I know there's a really popular charity with a great marketing team, and that's St. Jude, because every time you turn on the station or go to a store, we're always seeing how we can benefit the great work that St. Jude does. But if you are operating a charity or a nonprofit and you say, well, I am nowhere near that St. Jude level, rest assured that you are doing just fine, because 76% of public charities' annual revenue is between $0 and $99,000. So if you brought in $10,000 or $50,000 and you're just chugging along, fighting the good fight, doing the work of the Lord here in our communities, please be encouraged. Know that 76% of charities are performing in a very similar situation as yours. 13% of public charities have an annual revenue greater than $100,000 to just under $500,000 at $499,000. So if you're between that $100K to $499K, there are 13% of public charities in that boat with you. Now, if you are in the big leagues, right, moving on up, and you're in the 3% of charities with an annual revenue of $500K to $999K, but you're knocking on the door to that 5% of public charities with an annual revenue of $1 million to $4.9 million. Now, when we get into the St. Jude's and the Salvation Armies, we're talking about the 3%ers. That's 3% of public charities with an annual revenue of greater than $5 million. So if you are in the 76% within, you brought in less than $100,000, it's okay. There is work for you to do, and we encourage you, and people pull out your checkbooks and write those small charities a check, because they will stretch that dollar unbelievably to benefit the public around them. Miss Joanne, what I'd like to talk about now is governance and reporting. When nonprofits receive monies and dollars, it's not just between them and their bank. And boy, banking has been giving us some harsh lessons here lately with SV Bank going down in California. But we're not going to get into that. We're going to stay focused on nonprofits and their reporting. How do they make sure that they're accountable for the dollars they received? And does the board have any say in that? And go ahead and go ahead and introduce us to the accounting principles that nonprofits will be held accountable to.
Well, that's a good question, Veronique. And a lot of folks don't realize the reports, the financial reports required to keep a nonprofit stable and in compliance. First and foremost, a nonprofit organization can select their fiscal year. For example, it does not have to be calendar. You select your fiscal year, and it could be from June to next June. But once you select it, that's what it is. Once you selected your fiscal year, now you're subjected to reporting, documenting all of your financial activities. Those activities include, of course, your expenses, your debits, your credits. We still are accountable for using generally accepted accounting principles in what we do. We are responsible for independent audits, and that is two per year. Some of those reports may have to go to some of the people that we have received funding from. For example, St. Ambrose receives a great deal of money from Naval Works. And in their grant, as we talked about before, they require certain reports that would include the independent audits. They want to know the results of the independent audit. They also would like to receive on a monthly basis the statement of account. The statement of activities. They would like to receive that on a monthly basis. And then at the end of the year, they want to see the end of the year statement of activities. They would like to see the operating statement on a monthly basis, where we are month to date on a monthly basis. So that is a lot of reporting, some similar to for-profit companies, but not as standard as with a nonprofit. We also have the Department of Housing and Human Development. That would be at the state level. They require the same type of compliance to be sent to them and able to come in and review any of those financial reports on demand. Sometimes it's not something that's scheduled for. They can walk into your establishment and ask to see any of those documents on demand. Wow. We also have the federal government, which is HUD, Housing and Urban Development, which is a federal entity that requires not just financial compliance, but they want to see everything. They have their own documentation for recertifications for the clients or the tenants that they are paying rent for. They want to see on an annual basis a recertification to make sure that these tenants still qualify to receive funding from the programs that they have, that they send money to pay a portion of their rent. So these are a lot of compliance issues that that nonprofits have to engage in. Just to stay afloat. It is, every dollar has to be accounted for, not so much as in a for-profit company where you have some wiggle room and how you spend money. Every dollar that is donated has to be accounted for. Some of the other things that, or problems that we encounter is a lot of times, some of our benefactors may give some money in this fiscal year or say that they're going to donate monies in this fiscal year, but we don't receive it until the next fiscal year. So how is that a problem for the nonprofit? Well, of course, we still have to document it as being received, but we had no use of those funds. So that just gives you an idea of some of the issues that we have with funding and the type and how the funding or the accounting and finance works with a nonprofit.
Thank you. Yes, in addition to those issues with funding, while nonprofits do have that very worthwhile mission, that impact that they want to make on their community, they still have a lot of the same overhead and obligations as regular businesses. Share with us some of the responsibilities that nonprofits have. And also, one question I get a lot from people is, Well, how can I profit from my nonprofit? So, of course, that sounds like an oxymoron to me, to profit from your nonprofit. But in addition to the nonprofit's obligations or monthly obligations, just to keep the doors open, talk to us about how people profit from nonprofits as well.
Everyone believes that a nonprofit means that no one gets paid. We just operate based on donations. But part of that is true. A nonprofit gets revenue from their donations, their grants, and some of their memberships and their affiliations. So that's how they get the money to survive or to support the mission of the organization. However, there are still considerable expenses, just as in a for-profit company, as you mentioned. Some examples of those expenses that happen also in a for-profit company is that there is a rent or mortgage maybe on the site that you are using as the headquarters for your organization. You still have to purchase necessary supplies or to keep the services going in accordance with your mission. There's still transportation or gas. If say for example, you have a transportation company, you still have to pay for gas. You still have to pay for utilities. There's still a need for money for essential services that you need to provide for the organization. And lastly, and that's the most asked about a situation, is that you need money to pay salaries and compensation. So with any organization, nonprofit or for-profit, the salaries and the compensation that accompany the salaries is your largest expense out of all. So that's what keeps the organization going, the mind of the organization. So if you can see that there are similar things going on with regard to operations as with a for-profit company. But again, nonprofits get the majority of their revenue from donations, grants, and other membership affiliations.
Yes. And another one I want to add is marketing. Many people don't think that nonprofits, should market, but as I was speaking about St. Jude's, the bigger the marketing budget, the more of the impact they will have. Every nonprofit wants to be the organization that you think to give to when it comes down to December. They want to be at the forefront of your mind in terms of who that 30% of giving will go to. They want to be in the number, as the believers say. And so it's important for them to be able to see their missions and do the work that they do in our communities. Ms. Thomas, what is one of the biggest challenges that nonprofits face?
Well, considering the funding sources that occur with nonprofits, funding or being usually short on funds is the most biggest challenge of a nonprofit. And some of the issues that makes this even more intolerable for a nonprofit is that simply we can go back to in the beginning when we talked about the business plan. There is no concrete plan or any systematic approach that has been incorporated for your nonprofit. You have to have a plan. So, secondly, you would need to have realistic expectations for your outcome. And it all needs to be, again, tied back to your basic business plan, which lists your mission and your vision. Everything refers back to that. And then lastly, poor leadership. It is not written in stone that the executive director owns the company. He is just simply the leader, the president of the organization. If leadership is poor, you can expect poor results or poor performance of the nonprofit. Now, it's true that raising support for your nonprofit is really a challenging thing. However, people love to give to causes that resonate with them. Even in times of inflation or tighter economic times, we find that people will still give to the less fortunate because,
All right.
again, people are innately good. They want
I
to
agree
be.
with that. People are definitely innately good, but boy, did you step on some toes with that one. Those challenges and those, the plan, is your plan, was it prepared? Did you have realistic expectations? And are you suffering from poor leadership? People are going to have to take a big look at the man in the mirror and decide how they can do better and grow their nonprofits. Because as you stated, people are good. People want to give, but they want to see a good plan and they want to see great, charismatic, even leadership that helps them come out of their pocketbook. You've been in the nonprofit sphere for so long. What is the lesson that you've learned since you've been working in the industry?
Well, I've learned many, many, many lessons. I'm passionate about being a part of a machine such as this that provides support for people who are less fortunate than myself. It is so wonderful to see a mom who has children and was formerly in a domestic situation and had to leave the comforts of her original home to live in a shelter only to be given a house that's safe, clean, sanitary, and good for her and the family. It is so rewarding to see this. What I would say as far as lessons learned is that first and foremost, you stick to your business plan. If your business plan needs to be revised, it should be on an annual basis to look at where you are. There should be benchmarks throughout the fiscal year to determine what needs to be changed and what needs to remain the same. And also, not to grow too fast. A lot of times you have a great idea and you have a lot of folks who are interested in your idea, but you still have to put those processes in place to make sure that these things will happen on an ongoing basis. And that's how St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center has been in existence for over 53 years now. Because you look at these processes over and over again, and you don't depend on too much growth. Growth is not what you're looking at. Quality is what your goal is. Staying with your mission, always being a visionary. The other thing that I have, lesson that I've learned throughout my nonprofit history is this. And this is I really need everyone's ears on this one. And that is, oftentimes you will be granted money from another organization, an entity, and what have you. Again, they will grant it in this fiscal year when you need it, but it won't be given to you, or you won't actually receive the funds until when you don't need it. And it could be in, well, you always need it, but it could be in the next fiscal year. So therefore, holding fast to the purse is what I like to say. Mind the purse, mind the budget at all times, because those grants don't always come in when they were promised. So always hold fast to the purse, mind your budget, don't exceed your budget. Find times when you can negotiate these restrictive contracts so that they don't inundate you, and things of that nature. So always hold fast to the purse.
Yes, hold fast to the purse. You got to know when to trim the fat. You got to know when to switch the course of action. If the money is not lining up, before you let people work hours that you cannot afford, please let them know that they may seek other employment. We definitely have to be business people of sound principle and values when you're operating and running a nonprofit organization. We're about to close, and I do want to give you an opportunity to tell people how they can find St. Ambrose online and where they can donate. St. Ambrose does amazing work in the Baltimore, Maryland community, and we appreciate what they have done for the families in those areas. But before you get to that, give us some parting advice for our listener who wants to start a nonprofit.
Well, first and foremost, Veronique, I would say to check your heart. Your heart will tell you in what direction to go. For example, my heart and my passion has always been real estate. It has always been to help the underserved and vulnerable. How better to do that than to work for a nonprofit that supports my heart's vision? So therefore, I came to St. Ambrose knowing that I could continue with my personal ministry support the good news of Jesus Christ in my work. And I have found this over and over and over again. I was able to support my personal ministry in finding affordable housing for people that are underserved, people that are poor, and people that simply have not, there has not been a target market to support them. One thing I want to mention again is that St. Ambrose has a home sharing department, a whole department dedicated to youth. Our youth have not been recognized a lot in real estate per se, because youth are usually looked at as being governed by parents, but there is a significant increase in youth that are living on the street, homeless, with tents, under bridges, and things of that nature, that have nowhere to live, that have parents that were maybe addicted to drugs and just left them to fend for themselves. There is a great population for the youth. So that had tugged on my heartstrings as well. I want to be a part of an organization that provides those type of services. So in doing that, I joined St. Ambrose Housing Aid Center. And if you want to know more about what St. Ambrose does, you can visit the website, Or if you want to donate money to this well-worthy cause, you can visit www.stambrosewithnoe.org. www.stambros.org. Or you can contact us directly. We're located in Baltimore City, 410-366-8550. And we will be happy to tell you more about St. Ambrose and how to support our vision and mission. Thank you, everyone.
Yes, that's stambrose.org. No E S T A M B R O S dot O R G, or call by phone 410-366-8550. Have your credit cards ready to support that worthwhile mission. There are many worthwhile causes available today that need a champion. They need someone to stand up and fight to ensure that needs are met for those who are affected by those issues. You can be a champion today. You can decide you want to donate, volunteer, support a worthy cause or existing organization. You can also decide you want to create a nonprofit and build it yourself. Either way, nonprofits are alive and thriving today. It is an industry that you should be well aware of. We are signing off. Thank you for tuning in to Podcasts with Professionals, Nonprofit Edition. This has been an Epsilon Phi chapter of Iota Phi Lambda Sorority Incorporated production. Stay tuned for more this business month as we continue to give you the green print to entrepreneurship. Goodbye.